Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
Hello, celebrity gossip enthusiasts. I'm Us Weekly's entertainment director, Travis Cronin, and you're listening to Us Weekly's Hot Hollywood Podcast. Today, as always, I am so lucky to be joined by my two co-hosts, the diamond of this fashion season, Gwen Flamberg.
Oh, I shine bright, don't I, Trav? Thank you. Hi, guys.
Hello, and the woman who says life can't always be boats and rosé, but it should be, Sarah Heron.
Hi, Travis. You write a new tagline for me every week. It's such an honor.
I do. You should be. And, you know, call me Dr. Wendy, because I am filled with both happy and ness, because we have Danny Pellegrino on the show.
Hello.
Hosting everything iconic and the new book, How Do I Unremember This? Unfortunate True Stories. Thanks for joining us today, Danny.
Thank you, Travis. And one thing I will never unremember is Dr. Wendy on The Real Housewives of Potomac calling her breasts happy and ness. So thank you for that lovely introduction.
You're welcome. I hope a visual of her pole dancing with her braids and her exposed thong also comes to memory, because don't forget the back. She had that done too. It's rude not to mention it. Well, today we have royal babies, a royal memorial, A-list beef that will never die, and the most controversial boob job of 2022, says the courts of New York. But first, let's start with our woes of the week. These are the stories that made our hosts grab their proverbial pearls and just pull back aghast. Gwen Flamberg, what made you go woe this week?
Well, guys, I'm not sure if anybody else is following International Fashion Month as I have, but one Julia Fox, you may remember her from dating Kanye West just about a week or so ago.
Uncut Gems.
She hit the Diesel show in Milan, and lo and behold, her makeup was wild and crazy, just as it had been when she was in Paris for Couture Week with Kanye. But instead of her very heavy, crazy eyes being black, which Kanye did for her at the Schiaparelli show.
Shout out Crayola.
Are white. They are white, angelic. Is this an Easter egg? Is she trying to say that she's all lightness and angel wings? Since the split, I don't know, but it made me go, whoa. And guys, if you haven't seen the pictures, you know what to do. Go to usmagazine.com/stylish to see every celebrity street style pic from Milan and all through Fashion Month.
I love a hidden message.
Even if we're making it up.
Right. Doesn't matter. Da Vinci Code or Julia Fox, equal in my eyes.
100%. Yeah, I don't see any difference. Sarah Heron, what made you go well this week?
Well, I don't know if you guys have been watching Celebrity Big Brother, but I was very obsessed. Even though everyone's calling it like the worst season ever, I thought that made it even more fun to watch, because not one celebrity in this house besides Todrick Hall even knew what Celebrity Big Brother was. Also, Shanna Mokler. And the finale was last night and it was great. They were all super shady. Todrick's been getting all this crap because he was talking about Shayna's appearance on the live feeds. He was talking about Chris Kirkpatrick's son. Like, he was just being the worst. And the jury got their justice when they voted for Misha, and Todrick only got one vote. But now, poor Shayna, we need more justice for Shayna, because her crazy, my words, boyfriend, Matthew, took over her Instagram at like 7:30 LA time, posted on her feed this crazy 4-minute video in which he uses not very nice language to describe her, accuses her of sleeping with the neighbor, says she's not over Travis Barker. We've heard that Us Weekly has confirmed with the Los Angeles Police Department that the police are at their house. I believe Matthew may have even been arrested by now in custody after this recording. And I feel really bad because a couple months ago, when all this Kravis stuff was playing out, we were all like, Shayna Mokler, she's jealous. This is like not great. And now it's like, wow, justice for Shayna. She needs a real man and she should have won America's Favorite Player on Big Brother.
She was so great on Big Brother too. I fell in love with her for the first time on that show. I didn't know much about her before that.
Yeah. And on I've gone back and watched some episodes of Meet the Barkers on YouTube as a journalist does. And she definitely seems really sweet. And I feel like she's got the short end of the stick with this whole Kravis takeover thing. And now this like 29-year-old guy being emotionally abusive on Instagram stories, let alone who knows what happens in private. Like I'm hoping good things for Shayna.
Me too. It sort of sounds like you're in the FBI chair and you're like, police are outside up. They're going in. So please provide us with live updates of the police cop situation.
I will.
Whatever you call them. Well, Danny Pellegrino, author of How Do I Unremember This? Unfortunate True Stories. What made you go woe this week?
Okay, mine's not as scandalous, but I needed an outlet to get this out. So I feel like this is the right place. I saw the movie Dog with Channing Tatum, which I went into it. My friend and I were like, we're going to have a glass of wine, go see a matinee and have a good time. And I ended up like, I was sobbing. I was emotional. I was happy. I was sad. I was all of the things. Channing Tatum, there's this one scene, which this is not really a spoiler light, but there's one scene where he's just in a white top, a white blouse, as I like to say, completely wet from the rain, watching Grey's Anatomy with a dog. And I thought, is there anything more that we need from a movie? No. So I loved it. And I hope people see it. I had totally like no to low expectations. And it blew me away. I just thought it was fantastic. And so I hope that people give it a shot.
Well, I know you
actually sent my dog this dog pillow with Channing Tatum holding this that says, I woof you.
I mean, come on, Travis.
I know. I'll send it over to you. You need this. You loved it.
I need it.
Oh my God.
So thank you, Channing. They came addressed to my dog from Channing Tatum's dog. So thank you to Channing Tatum's dog.
I do have a question about this movie, though. I've seen the promos and the promo just states like Channing Tatum has a dog. Like, is there plot in this film?
I mean, I think that's enough, if you ask me, Sarah, but there is plot. There's the plot. And on the poster, because every time I mention this movie to friends, they're like, I can't see it because the dog dies. But I have to say on the poster, it says the dog doesn't die. So that's that's something to go into the movie knowing. I hope that's not a spoiler because they put it on the freaking poster. But I feel like people don't know that. I feel like a lot of people, you think, I don't want a really sad movie in that way. So, yeah.
Wow. Okay. 10 out of 10 recommends Dog just for the scene with Grey's Anatomy and Shirley Tatum.
And by the way, Travis, I don't have a dog right now, but I will put my head on that pillow if you send it.
There you go. You can rub against Channing Tatum's chest in his black blouse.
Wouldn't it be the first time I did that on a printed object of Channing Tatum, but that's neither here nor there.
We were all teenagers once. I get it. Well, the story that made me go whoa this week is about The Crown. We haven't heard a lot about The Crown, except they've been having troubles filming. But yesterday, about $200,000 worth of gemstones, silverware, and antiques were stolen from the set. One stolen item was a replica of a rare Fabergé egg that belonged to Queen Elizabeth II's grandfather, George V, in 1933, a way throwback. A candelabra, jewelry, a grandfather clock, and a birdcage were among the goods. Police were called to scenes and have been hunting for the robbers. But like, what a strange flex to steal crown jewels that are props from a set. Like, are these just, women of varying ages who want to get their hands on these props? Because I can't imagine these fake gemstones and uncut gems are worth a lot of money. It's a no for me. Well,
I think we need an Ocean's 9 about this. You know, we got Ocean's 8, which that's all I'm thinking about is Ocean's 8 as you're telling that story. And I feel like we never got the sequel to that. And this sounds, I don't know how they work it. Someone else above my pay grade can figure that out. But I'd like to see Sandra Bullock do something with this.
Okay, I'm back in after that idea.
They're all like middle management. The
Fabergé egg is good.
Middle management, like crown friends who just want tchotchkes for their apartment. And that is the motivation for everything. We need sconces, ladies. Grab them. Mm-hmm. let us bust into some of the news. Well, Skeet Davidson has been shaded once again by Kanye West. Now, Pete has re-deactivated his Instagram account that didn't have any photos or videos or anything on his feed, but still had hundreds of thousands of followers. I get it, but I also don't get it. And did he sort of threw shade back at Kanye West, sort of about time? He added a YouTube video to his LinkedIn bio of Rupert Pupkin, who was Robert De Niro, the Kings of Comedy performance. And in the clip, it said, better to be a king for a night than a schmuck for a lifetime. Fans believe this clip was a message for Kanye, who has, of course, been targeting Kim, Pete, and really anyone else who goes into his path. This YouTube video was originally posted in 2016, and then all of the comments section are discussing Pete throwing shade at Kanye. Now, what do we think? Do we think this is just Pete sharing his favorite video, or do we think it's something more?
Always a hidden meeting, right? I mean, there's always some, like we talked about, we love a hidden meeting, and there has to be. I mean, especially someone who's so inactive on Instagram to post something like that in their profile. It's like obviously sending some sort of message.
I want to know what the message was of why the first two people he decided to follow were Kim and Sebastian Stan.
Well, like, obviously he is watching
Pam and Tommy.
Blue vehicle. Oh. Yes, that is giving
I'm
everything.
So stupid. How did I not know?
It's okay. I mean, listen, if you've seen Sebastian Stan's Penis Chalk, then you might want to follow him too.
Okay, fair. He's still Carter from Gossip Girl to me, so I need to check out Pam and Tommy. I haven't had a chance to watch it yet.
Oh, Sarah, do yourself a favor.
I know.
It's good. I liked it.
Yeah,
I liked it too.
Right, now, this morning, in addition to, you know, trying to be a cop with Shanna Mokler, I also had to pretend to be a lawyer reading Kim Ye's new divorce documents that were 155 pages long. And oh my God, like Kim really, really wants to be divorced, and I get it. And she's basically begging the court, like, if you declare us legally single, maybe my estranged husband will understand that that means we are never, ever, ever getting back together. And she's accusing him of like emotional distress with these Instagram posts. She's like, I've done everything I can to try to keep this private, and Kanye West will not let me. His team filed these documents that are trying to make it difficult for Kim to get remarried if that happens down the line. There's so much mess there. And I've been team Kim forever, and I'm more team Kim than ever. And I need Kanye to just like back off.
You know, it was the Taylor reference for me in that, Sarah, I really appreciated that one. I just feel bad for everybody involved in this story. I mean, Kim, obviously, from what I read, and I did not read all 150 pages of that decree, but she just seems really at wit's end to make this happen and to move on. I feel bad for Kanye because he is mentally ill and he's not handling this in a rational way. And I wish that his handlers would try to do something. I've known some of them through the years, and I know that it's very, very difficult to intervene in any way with his desires, but none of this looks good on his end. And there are four children involved here. And I feel most bad for Pete Davidson, who, you know, should be just living his best life with that body, yaddy, yaddy. And none of it is good for any of these people.
I don't imagine that when Pete started dating Kim, and obviously you can't control the ones that you love, but it's like, I can't imagine the stress and everything that he's experienced going into this whole ordeal, because he just started dating someone. And then not only is it on such a public platform, but then all these other layers to it, you know, with Kanye, it's tough to watch.
It is very tough to watch. And a source told us, close to Kim Kardashian early this week, that the two of them do have a prenup. They have all of their assets divided already. That is not going to be a contentious part of it. They have agreed to custody. But the only thing that Kanye is dragging his heels about is her getting remarried, which is, I don't know if you've seen Fear with Mark Wahlberg and Reese Witherspoon, but
the roller coaster scene.
The roller coasters. Absolutely. It's very that A Story as Old as Time, an ex semi-abusive, mentally incapacitated boyfriend not letting up on his wife.
Can I ask a question? How is he saying you can't get remarried, or what is the block there? What is he trying to block exactly? I'm confused.
Legal expert Sarah Huron, please. Subsection two.
Well, my favorite part of the documents are the part where they said, quote, they are both independently wealthy. So like you said, Travis, They have all their prenup stuff from 2014 in stone. But Kanye's team is doing whatever they can, pretty much from my understanding, to make it difficult for this divorce to go through. So while Kim, quote, seeks relief from West's bitterness and unhappiness, they think that his opposition to Ms. Kardashian's request to be restored to the status of a single person has little, if anything, to do with the property or sufficiency of approved conditions, and everything to do with the fact that he does not want their marriage to end. Her team also suggests that his goal is to prevent or make it difficult for Kardashian to remarry in the future, calling his request to waive all marital privileges should she remarry unprecedented. Now, I'm Noelle Woods, but I would say that they are just going out of their way to make this divorce difficult so Kanye can hang on to this marriage, and which is Kim's team is doing everything they can to stop that and have the court.
I am Elle Woods and I object because that is just, it's so uncute and so bitter to stop the person that you used to love from declaring themselves single, from getting married. Like, that's the hill you're dying on to stop them from moving on. Bitter Betty.
Four kids. Yeah. It's just icky.
A lot of the stuff is icky. I mean, the Valentine's Day stuff with the public post that Kanye did of delivering the flowers and stuff like that. I don't know if in his mind, he's thinking that's a great way to win him back. But I think most of the public is just looking at that as very icky.
Yeah.
Desperate.
Yeah.
And it said crystal clear with 2 K's on the side of that pickup truck. That is what I remember. The decals, crystal clear with K's. I mean, I actually have no words for that. Well, Sarah Heron, can you tell us why Corey Gamble, former bodyguard to Justin Bieber and friend of P. Diddy, also got involved in this?
Yeah, I can. I mean, speaking of the alliteration, though, I just want to point out real quick that Tristan's baby mama, Marley, announced her baby's name and it's Theo. And I was like, Theo, 4-letter word starts with T. True, 4-letter word starts with T. Throwing that out there. Anyway, yeah, Corey Gamble. There was a report over the weekend that Corey Gamble was an alleged video of him cheating on Kris Jenner. From everything I understand, it was not Corey Gamble in the video, but that did not stop Kanye West from sharing the report on his Instagram and calling out Corey. And now he's threatening him. And I don't know why he has such beef with Corey Gamble, but he seems to really be angry with him.
It is. And Hollywood Unlocked is having a rough week. They tweeted that the queen was dead with sources close to the royal kingdom, which isn't even what you say about it.
I mean, that it was just ridiculous. I read that post. They said the queen was supposed to go to British Vogue editor-in-chief Edward Enninful's wedding.
Did the queen do that, Gwen?
Never. And by the way, the only fact that was true in that was that Edward Enninful was getting married on that day. But even if he had extended an invitation to Queen Elizabeth to come to his wedding, which he may have done, it was never thought that she would attend a wedding of a commoner, not to mention
that
the poor woman had tested positive for COVID. She's no Boris Johnson. She ain't going to party after she had been diagnosed. The whole thing was
fiction.
Ridiculous.
Yes.
Total fan fiction.
And Hollywood Lock did post the video of Corey Gamble as well, which is the connection. So yeah, tough week over there.
Oh my
God.
Well, maybe they need to check their sourcing. Or, honestly, what I took away from all of these things that happened this week for Hollywood Unlocked is that we're in a time where, how did all of this trend on Twitter? It was all fake news. And how does this happen now?
Well, I think with Twitter, everyone's also trying to get their own hot takes on all of this stuff. So oftentimes people just quote retweet something they see with their own opinion on it. And then it just spreads like wildfire. And it is amazing how everything can spread so quickly nowadays. And then oftentimes I think of there's people like us, we're on Twitter all day long, or at least me, I'm checking it constantly, refreshing my feed. But I think there's a large segment of the population who maybe just checks it once a day. They see one thing, they don't see the follow-up of that's not real or that's not true or something. And so it just, they're at a dinner party telling their friends about this story that they believe to be true. And then it just keeps on spreading. It's impossible almost to take it back once it's out to the world.
Right. That's so true.
Luckily,
thank God there's fact checkers like us.
God, there's people that listen to this podcast, so you won't be humiliated at a dinner party when you're like, the queen has died of COVID. She was supposed to attend a common wedding, as she always does, kicks off her heels, puts on the complimentary flip-flops, and just dances at commoners' weddings.
It's a lesson to us all. Always listen to the Us Weekly podcast, because that's where you
thank
get
you,
the
Danny.
True stories.
You get the hot takes on Housewives, on Everything Iconic, and you get the very important breakdowns of court documents and the queen right. social calendar on Hot Hollywood Podcast.
It's all important.
Yes,
it is. Well, and more royal news, Kate Middleton wants another kid? Question mark. Well, Kate Middleton joked about Prince William's worries about her spending time with babies because it makes her want more of their own. She met with parents and their young children on Tuesday with her first solo royal tour in Denmark since COVID, and she revealed that she sometimes considers having a fourth child. "It makes me very broody," Kate Middleton admitted to researchers from Copenhagen Infant Mental Health Project during a visit to the University of Copenhagen. She says, "William always worries about me meeting under one-year-olds. I come home saying, let's have another one." And then William said earlier, "Don't give my wife any ideas," in January when she was holding a cute little baby. And while she was holding, says, "Don't take her with you." Tuesday was not the first time that Kate Middleton described herself as quote unquote broody. During a 2019 visit to Northern Ireland, she used the term while meeting a 5-month-old boy, baby number 4, the tot's father asked at the time. And she replied, "I think William would be a little worried." This is like such a stereotypical, like, heterodox normative back and forth about, like, oh, she wants another baby, but William's not going to allow it. I that's what I feel. So I can't really tell if there's any truth to this or it's just very 50s Tim keeping his wife in check from wanting all the babies.
It definitely feels like an episode of King of Queens to me.
Totally.
For sure.
That's a good name for it, honestly, too.
Wait, I just have to say, I mean, like, Kate Middleton, do whatever you want. I love royal babies. Just, like, announce it at a convenient time for me personally. That's all I ask of the royal family at all times. But it just to segue a little bit into Dani's book, I know we're going to talk about it, but the way you just, like, pull out your pop culture references, which anyone who listens to your podcast knows that, in this book, the way you go from, like, describing something that happened in your childhood that was, like, a really defining moment or, like, your coming out story, and then all of a sudden we're quoting Coyote Ugly. Like, it's just perfectly balanced. Can you tell me a little bit about, like, how you decided, how, like, when you put those in and when, like, to keep it serious? Because I thought it was perfectly executed, but is that, like, a thing you were constantly thinking about?
Gosh, Sarah, you are such a pro, the way you just pivoted from that story. I am just so incredibly impressed, and I thank you for it, because we want people to buy the book.
Yes.
But yes, no, thank you so much for saying that. I have always been a pop culture junkie, and so one of the interesting things was when I was writing this book, I would send my editor a chapter, and there was one point where I was like, are there too many pop culture references? Because you're right, there would be, you know, a Coyote Ugly reference, my best friend's wedding, and then, I don't know, Garfield or something. It was just jam-packed. And I was like, is this too much? And my editor's like, no, that's you. Just lean into it. And other people who love the same things as you will like it too. And so one of the things we had talked about was, like, if you don't get the reference on page 7, maybe you'll get the one on page 8. And for for pop culture junkies like ourselves, I think part of the fun, hopefully, is remembering some of those moments or movies, TV shows, toys, books, all that kind of stuff that's referenced in the book. So I had fun sort of jam packing it with those references. And I think they're a lot of them are mostly nostalgic too.
Totally. Sorry, it's also just, no worries. It's so much fun because it makes everybody realize that, like, something didn't happen for them. And, like, you know, a lot of, I think, the younger generation are criticized a lot for thinking that they created these trends, but it's just so great to tie it back to something. And it just shows that, like, we're all the same. We can all love the same things. And I think it actually, like, really ties a lot of what's happening now to what happened then. And, like, just bringing the generations together. You're doing God's work, Dani.
Thank you. Thank you. I really do believe, like, pop culture is the great unifier. So especially during these times where we're all sort of disconnected, I think it's always easy enough to connect with someone on their favorite movie or TV show or something. You know, most of my family lives in Ohio, and some of them, we might have different political views or whatever, but oftentimes you still want to be able to have a relationship with them. And I think something that's easy enough to spark a conversation is movies or TV. And just recently I was talking to my mom and I was like, what are your favorite movies? Like, I want to sit and watch your favorite ones. Because when I was growing up, we watched my dad's favorite movies, but never really my mom's. I had two older brothers, so we would watch the Caddyshacks and Vacation, Animal House. And I talked to my mom and she gave me, like, The Way We Were and Love Story and some of her favorite things. So I watched them, and then we had such, like, a wonderful conversation about them afterwards. And I think it was just, she felt so excited that I liked some of the things, and it just made me remember like how important that is to connect with each other on that stuff, especially when we so often just want to fight with each other about this is my opinion on that and this.
And Tyra Banks can keep us all together from atop that bar with that red hair. I believe in her.
Travis, Tyra Banks can heal the world. I mean, honestly, some of the moments that she's given us throughout the years, I could go on and on. How long is this podcast? We could talk Top Model. We could talk about her talk show, which was unhinged in the best of ways.
Unhinged.
Yeah. I mean, when she pretended to die, I mean, who could forget that moment? I say to my fiance all the time, I'm like, I only have one photo because you did not deserve a photo. All the time that he takes a bad photo of me.
That show was wild. Wild. Wild.
It was.
I get a rush just thinking about some of the things that happened on there. It was crazy.
Well, thank God TikTok is delving it from the ages and shaming them for all the right reasons.
It's true.
And TikTok and all these social media platforms are making these moments live on. I mean, we talk about Tyra Banks, and there's so many of her moments that I don't think will ever go away. They're now in the zeitgeist forever in memes and internet culture.
And to steal
my fat ass.
Oh yeah, literally. To steal Travis, probably transition you're coming up with. I know you want to talk about Wendy. So if we're talking about, you know, talk show hosts.
I do. Well, Wendy Williams was my radio DJ growing up that I would listen to all the time after high school. So I feel such a sense of protection about her. Sort of. She sort of made it really hard in the last coming years. Yesterday, it was announced that after 14 seasons on the air, the Wendy Williams show is coming to an end as the host continues to very, very much struggle with her health. However, Wendy Williams has since responded to her representative statement online in a move that seemingly calls into question the fate of her daytime show. Now, there was an official announcement yesterday. Howard Bragman sent a message on behalf of Wendy, said it's been a challenging time for Wendy as she deals with health issues. She is incredibly grateful to Debmar Mercury and Sherry and everyone else who has supported the show through the time. She more than anyone understands the reality of syndicated television. La la la, please giving us our money. She's not going to be here anymore. However, Wendy Williams took to Instagram to write, "Mr. Bragman, although I appreciate your concerns and respect you immensely, I have not authorized you to make statements upon my behalf regarding my current status with Debmar Mercury. Again, thank you for your continuing concern and support." Bragman has since released another public statement in regards to the post on the newly created Instagram account, saying that Sherry Shepherd will be taking over. Now, this wouldn't be a Wendy Williams show without shady back and forth. And how is that for Wendy? Iconic shade, even on the way out, she is tearing the walls down, letting them have it. Good luck to Sherry Shepherd.
You know, you got to stay on brand. And Wendy did with that exchange. It's been a really very, very tough couple of years for Wendy. But I do have to say, you know, as happens often in pop culture history, as she became more unhinged, so did her wigs.
Very,
I didn't think we were going there right now. I wasn't expecting that.
Yeah, me either.
But I have in my head, you know, of course, I have to do my shameless plugs. But on the current episode of our beauty podcast, Glam Squad Confidential, we do talk about the best and worst moments in beauty and fashion and TV right now. And so I have been thinking about this. As characters become more unhinged, it really shows in their beauty.
Huh. There's still so many questions with the Wendy situation too, that I think I'm so excited to hear, hopefully at some point, like what was going on behind the scenes, whether that be from Wendy or some of the producers, because even the public statements that the show and that Howard and Wendy and people have been making, I don't think they add up. And I don't know that we're getting a full, I mean, I know we're not getting a full story of what was going on there behind the scenes. And so I hope one day we learn, because I think there's much more to it than what they're telling us.
Absolutely.
I'm worried we're never going to know, because she did that Lifetime movie about her life. Her and Kevin Hunter had such a contentious relationship. I've had many sources on the show tell me stories that I cannot repeat on here that were horrible. And the Lifetime movie didn't show even a snippet of that. So I'm a little, unlike Britney Spears, I'm a little unsure of her telling her own story truthfully in the way that we want it to.
But Danny, you always talk about The View. And Sherry Shepherd was on The View, right?
Yes, she was on The View for years. Yeah.
And so how do you feel about her taking over?
I'm excited for Sherry to take over. I don't think anyone can necessarily fill Wendy's shoes. I think it'll be a different show. And I think the challenge going forward for Sherry is going to be to do her own show while also somehow filling the expectation of her filling the Wendy Williams seat. Because Wendy sitting on that purple chair for 20 some minutes at the top of each show and giving her opinion, that is so much harder than I think people realize. And Sherry's fantastic. But I think viewers are going to go in both expecting Sherry to do the shoe cam and to do that 20 minutes of Hot Topics and to do almost the same show Wendy did. And she's either not going to live up to it or she's going to pivot and try to take away a lot of those things. And then the viewers of Wendy are going to be pissed about that. So I almost feel like with the Sherry going forward, I don't know that there's a win-win for her. I think she's always going to be compared to that show. And if she does a hard pivot, people are going to be mad that she's changing the Wendy show. And so I think it's going to be impossible for her. But if there's anyone that could do it, maybe it's Sherry Shepherd, because I love her.
Don't lose the shoe cam, first and foremost, and maybe bring back season one Wendy Williams when she would take the notes from under her wig and she would take a Slim Jim and light it with a lighter for her little pre-show snack. That was my favorite. She did that the entire first season, the opening. She would take her notes out of her wig, take a Slim Jim, hit it with a lighter, and have herself a little barbecue snack.
Wow.
Well, I want
not
to know
a
the
bad
status
snack. Of, I might have that today.
Yeah. I need to know about Norman. Is Norman going to be there? I don't know.
Oh, yeah. I love Norman. I think they should keep Norman. Well, how you doing? Good luck to Sherry Shepherd. Danny, if you love Sherry and believe in her, then I will take a chance on little Sherry Shepherd, the girl who can.
I did. When I was in college, I wrote Sherry Shepherd an email and she wrote me back because I loved her on Less Than Perfect. This was pre The View.
Oh, yeah.
So she wrote always, you back?
She wrote me back. So I always have love in my heart for Sherry. She wrote me back in a fan letter in college. So there
you go. That's really nice. Sweet.
It is.
Do you know who else is sweet? Channing Tatum in a see-through wet blouse.
Oh, bringing him back up.
Bringing him back up. Because
I'm glad I'm not the one to do it.
You know, Channing Tatum's nipples and physique should always be a topic of conversation. We love objectifying men just the same we do women every day. So Channing, you're up. So he was on the Kelly Clarkson show this week and revealed that he is starving himself and the dread that comes along with getting his Magic Mike physique back. It was almost enough for him to turn down the third movie. Channing admitted that the brutal diet that he undergoes has become as lean as he is. To become as lean as he is on screen is the opposite of healthy, and he has to starve himself and work out twice a day before filming. Kelly says, "You don't work out regularly all the time," she says. Channing said, "Even if you do work out, to be in that kind of shape is not natural. It's not even healthy. You have to starve yourself. I don't think that when you're that lean, it's that healthy for you." He says, "Why does it take 2 months to get lean, but like 3 days to lose it? What happened? It was just the weekend. And the thing he misses most is salt." Now, expert on Channing Tatum's body, Danny Pellegrino, what are your thoughts on this?
I am an expert. And I love Channing's body in any form. I like when he's in his Magic Mike shape, or I like when he's in his Dear John shape, or whatever shape that may be. However, I'm glad that we're all finally being honest and open about this, because when we see these Marvel bodies on these men and Chris Hemsworth, who's stunning looking, and he's got this fitness app that he's saying, you know, do this fitness app. And I think people download the app and think they can suddenly look like this. But the fact is, it's like to look like that is a full-time job, and they have nutritionists and trainers and people pulling the cupcakes out of their mouths and their hands. And we don't all have that. And so I think for so long, we always talk about women's beauty standards. And I think we do need to start talking about that male beauty standard with the rise of these Marvel projects and every single movie and these men having to have perfect bodies. You know, when I was in the 80s and 90s, the action men, of course we did have people like Sylvester Stallone and Arnold Schwarzenegger, but we also had people like Bruce Willis, who was an action hero with a pretty, I don't want to say
normal.
A normal or a more normal.
Like stars just like us.
Yeah, it looked like he worked out, but it didn't look like he spent the day in the gym.
Right.
And I think that now every single man on screen in any action film or whatever, it has to be completely ripped. And that's not normal for people or healthy. I don't even think it's healthy.
Exactly.
No, you're totally right. I remember when I interviewed David Gandy, the British male supermodel, gorgeous. There aren't many of those so gorgeous, about getting ready for a shoot. And he told me that he stops drinking water for 3 days before a shoot so that his, you know, he can be so lean that everything pops out. And like, that's super unhealthy, dude. Like, hydration is key. So I agree with you. I do think that beauty standards for men should be addressed. Let's do that. Let's take that. I'm going to take up that torch.
Well, one, first of all, in Tori Spelling's book, which, you know, is something something I reference quite often, the first one, yeah. Okay. I think, or maybe the second one, it was Storytelling or Mommy Would. She quotes Us Weekly and she says that she's like, yeah, I lied and said I started swimming to lose like my baby body, but really I just shut up and ate air. And that always stuck with me because it was like, at least Tori Spelling admitted in the book that she like lied to Us Weekly about how she lost the baby weight. Yeah. But it's like, why are we asking? It's hard because it's like a thing people want to know, but it's kind of gross. And I like that Channing Tatum was admitting it openly, like this sucks and normal people can't do this. But also to do another transition, Danny, in your book, you talk about body image and stuff. I read that you talked about that even in the beginning from what I got to, right? Like that's like one of the things you address.
Yeah, well, I think I've always struggled with body image and I don't think there's a lot of men that talk about it. And it was hard. I didn't even open up about it maybe as vulnerably as I would have liked because I felt so vulnerable. Even just addressing it as much as I did. And I wish I was stronger enough to like completely lay out all of my own issues with body image and food and all of that kind of stuff. But I just don't know if I'm quite there yet, but I did try to address it as much as I could because I don't think men talk about it. And I think particularly in the gay community, a lot of gay men, they try to live up to these beauty standards and body types. And it is an impossible goal. And it's not, I don't think it's healthy. And
let's get you and Channing on a panel together talking about, Gwen can moderate it on a panel about male beauty standards.
Yeah. Yeah. And called the West Hollywood Pool Party.
I'm so glad though, Channing is finally just saying like, it's not healthy. It's not good. Stop it. And at the same time, I'm also very happy that we're getting him
Magic Mike 3. Yeah,
100%. Very happy about it. And I'm going to look and ogle and love it. So
we'll take anybody he gives us. Yes, right. We'll take anybody he gives us. Sonia Morgan actually told me on the record, it's fine to say, and when she lost 10 or 15 pounds, I was like, Sonia, you look great. You lost weight. She's like, oh yeah, I took Adderall in the morning. She's like, and then I have a cocktail by 4 p.m. And by 9 p.m., I'm ready for bed. And I barely eaten anything at all.
Oh my God.
And I was like, thank you. I've done so many celebrity diet interviews and thank you for being
honest. You did the Tori Spelling one where she lied about swimming.
I very much might have. I've talked to Tori so many times I couldn't even remember her, you know, talking about that BS of her losing weight in the pool just because I know it's not true. She's like, I did 4 laps. So I've lost. Yeah. I've snatched this body right back.
And the men's health magazines are always like how to get whatever the Marvel superhero is, how to get their body. And it's like, well, they're smoking and Adderall and, you know, whatever.
Housewives love water pills, whatever those are.
Oh, yeah. I used to use those back in the day. Wouldn't recommend at all.
And really when it comes to the housewives water pills, it's like all the signs are there. It's like, we can clearly see how that person's acting after they have one glass of alcohol, one glass of wine or something. And yet we're all still sort of acting like it's not happening in front of us. We're like, oh, they just had too much to drink. It's like they had one glass of wine, but they're doing, you know?
Yeah.
To quote Kim Richards, have some bread. Maybe it calmed down.
It's true. We all need some bread to calm down. We all need some bread. The moral of the story.
Yes. I'm so glad we got through this intense story.
Well, Sarah Huron, I'm going to let you pick what topic we're going to do next. There are two breakups. Are you going to tell us about the boob job of 22 or the opposing political side, people who have broken up and have no love lost?
I do kind of want to talk about Julia Hart's boob job because I don't know if I know, Gwen, you watched. Did everyone watch My Unorthodox Life? Because that show, season one, was interesting, but season two is going to be so much better because this divorce is getting so messy. And in more court documents that I read, he is accusing her of using company funds to pay for her boob job and other cosmetic procedures.
Yeah, they're expensive.
Season two, stepping
season
it up.
Two. Like, let's go. I'm so excited.
I mean, when someone, go ahead, Danny.
Oh, sorry. I don't think season one got quite enough buzz, but they got just enough to come back for season two. And so now we're just really like leaning into the mess, I think, over there.
Well, yeah. I think that, you know, the thirst to be a reality star and have a reality show, I think she floated the idea that she was willing to divorce her husband on camera, you know, and have her whole career blow up if the cameras could be there.
Yeah. Yes, they could. She really has come out as a great reality star. She's got all the right makings of it. So thank you for Julia Hart for holding that torch of the messy reality show that we so desperately needed in our lives.
It's so hard to stand out now with the reality show. I mean, we've been doing this for so many years and it's almost impossible to have a moment somebody hasn't seen before or have a storyline that people are talking about. And obviously, we want everything to be okay with her, but it is interesting to me just taking her specific story out of the equation and just seeing how these shows, in order to survive, they need a messy moment because we've seen so many come and go so quickly. And it's fascinating to watch certain people step up to that occasion and you wonder how much of it is what real, what's not. I don't know.
Yeah. Right.
Well said.
Well, Danny, we're going to ask you about some Housewives things because I hear you're a little bit of an expert and you may watch a couple seasons.
I watch way too much of it, Travis. Way too much. Somebody needs to stop me at some point. But
never.
Yes. Not on this podcast, Danny. We support it. We say quit your job and watch more Housewives here. That is our tagline.
That's what I did.
That's literally what he did.
That's literally what I did.
Literally what you did. Well, we are going to do some rapid fire of some superlatives for the Housewives from an expert who quit his job to focus on the Housewives, and it worked out. So, you know, follow his lead.
Chase your dreams.
Shoot for the stars.
Shoot for the stars. And these stars are on Bravo. Now, for the Housewives, I want you to give superlatives to the ultimate. This is all
Wait,
time.
Travis, I'm like, I don't know why I'm like so nervous. I want to give like the best answer.
They're easy.
So, okay. I'm like shaking. I'm like, wait a minute. I am nervous about this.
Yes. So these are for all Housewives, all time. And there are no wrong answers because there's a lot of ladies that can fit in all these spots.
Just kidding.
Well, and if there is, we'll let you know.
Okay. Yeah.
So Housewives, who do we think is the ultimate shadiest number one housewife of all?
Probably Kenya Moore. Kenya Moore. I think her and Phaedra are both expert level shade people. Fantastic. A plus.
Fantastic.
Okay, great. The most two-faced.
Oh, the most two-faced. Oh my gosh. I love Lisa Barlow, but I would say Lisa Barlow. I think she kind of just lives for the housewifery. And so I think she kind of will follow whatever she thinks is best for the show. Mm. And the way we saw her hot mic moment this past season with Meredith, I mean, was one of the most two-faced things I've ever seen on any of these shows.
And now she's twisting it and she's blaming the network for airing it, like based on the reunion promo, at least, which I can't wait for.
Isn't it delicious, Sarah? I love it. I mean, that moment where she's just railing on her friend of a decade plus. And it's like, whoa, you really thought this. I couldn't imagine Meredith watching it at home.
No.
Also, your mics are on. They're always on.
And now you never know when Bravo's going to use the hot mic or when they're not going to use it or if they're going to show you talking to the producer, which they just did on Jersey. You never know what's going to come out now.
You do not. Which housewife drinks the most?
Oh, my gosh. I think Sonia. At this past season, she reels it in, but I think when Sonia drinks, she does a roller coaster. So she'll stop and then she'll start again. She'll stop, start again. But so I think
it's like
when
New York is a collective, I think.
I used to call it New York Alcohol, the TV show, because it's really,
you did say that.
There have been a few seasons where it's just like every single episode, the entire cast is hammered.
So hammered. Like when they were in the Hamptons and all those ridiculous outfits, they're like, what are we wearing? Just tanked all of them. Thank you for being so direct. Who has the best clothes?
I used to love Carol's style on New York. I thought it was interesting and fun to watch, I think. Or in terms of Beverly Hills, you know, I don't love Dorit's style, but I love seeing what labels she's wearing because she's so into her labels that I find it fascinating sociologically or something. So I think Dorit's what I'm looking at most of, like, is she, what is that label she's wearing?
Yeah. Well, yeah, she'll let you know. It's usually all over it. She's not going to hide it.
Yeah.
She makes it nice, guys.
Dorit's finances also are one of the ones that are confusing. So the ones when they like really go with the fashion and the brand, and then we're just waiting for like, okay, when are we going to find out what's really going on here? It always makes me excited.
And I don't know about you all, but I love watching to see some of the designers and see if they're fake. And there have been Instagram accounts that literally like point out Because a lot of times the housewives will wear the label, but it's a fake, it's a whatever. And they'll point out like a, I don't know, a misprint or something.
Yeah,
on the
like
label,
the Fendi
and I love that.
On Karen Huger's dress.
Live for that. Live Karen. For that.
Okay. It was like, it was a lot of dress to be fake. Who do you think has the most unique sense of style? Who sort of dresses different, the most different of all of them?
Oh, good question. Oh my gosh. The most different. Mary Cosby from Salt Lake City. She's also very into labels and she's very wealthy and has some great labels. But I feel like sometimes I'm like, what is that?
Well, I also called the show Hoarders to go do a checkup on her. And Social Services for Prada is also going to check her hoarder's closet because I had never seen anything like that.
I would live for her to have an estate sale and just be able to browse that closet. God,
that would be amazing. But, you know, you've watched her on the show. You know that's never going to happen.
Well, she barely leaves the closet. So
she'd be there selling.
She'd be there. Yeah.
With her step-grandfather husband right there.
I like a lot of register. Her. I like a lot of her stuff, though, but I do think it's sometimes a lot. Yeah.
Who do you think is the best duo on the show? What team, when they pair up, are you the most excited about?
I famously hate the duo because every time on Housewives, they think they're Lucy and Ethel, and they point it out every single time. So whether it be Vicky and Tamra or, I don't know, Kim and Brandy on Beverly Hills, it's like they always... think that they're Lucy and Ethel. But so I would say my favorite duo is Karen and Giselle on Potomac because they're
beautiful.
They just have a great dynamic. Their scenes together are so explosive and they have this love-hate thing going on. And that's more fascinating to me than two people buddy hopping around and saying, oh, we're Lucy and Ethel, you know?
Frenemies
for the win. And also I've been rewatching Atlanta season 2.
The best.
And the Kim and Nene dynamic is the best TV of all time. I mean, and with Sheree in the mix, but like it's unreal. And there was like rumors at one point that we were going to get a Nene and Kim travel series a few years back. And I wish we would have gotten that because seeing those two together, television gold.
And they said goodbye, wig, to that show, which is just so sad. Bye, wig. Bye,
close your legs wig. To married men, and they went on their way.
Close your legs to married men. Don't Be Tardy for the Party is obviously the number one best song, correct?
Yes. Yes. Of I mean, I love Luann's songs, too, but Don't Be Tardy is just like an actually really good song.
Yeah. And On Display isn't as bad as people think it is.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, I'm team Melania for best Bravo song. I don't want to grow up is my favorite. I quote it in everyday life.
Do you remember when Danielle Staub had a song called Too Close that she
did? I remember the Hex Hector remix with her lesbian lover.
Travis, you're speaking my language. Yes. The dance remix was phenomenal. And also she did like a dramatic ballad on ballad version of it on Watch What Happens Live. That was stunning and haunts me to this day.
My mom went to her album signing in Provincetown and sent me a picture of Danielle signing me a picture. And it says, stay positive, love Danielle. And like a glamour shot of her in heels. I still have it up in my home.
Sure. Sure.
Thank you, mom. And my last question is, because we do a lot of fake celebrity fights here, which housewife, all of them are in a ring, do you think is going to win in a fight?
Oh my gosh. Well, you know who was a really good opponent, and she was only on the season one time, Claudia Jordan. But to me, Nene's one of the greatest housewives I think we've ever had. But there was this episode where Claudia and Nene were sort of going at it, and Claudia, the way that she held her own against Nene, who's amazing, and actually in Dave Quinn's book, it was revealed he has a book called All Diamonds and Rosé, which is sort of this oral history of the housewives. And I remember, I might be quoting it wrong, but I remember him saying in the book, like, Nene respected Claudia so much for that, because although they were feuding at the time, Nene was recognized how it made such a great housewife. So she always stands out. I wish she would have had more time on the show because watching that scene, it was like, Claudia was just great. And so, I don't know. I guess maybe she'd be most underrated or something. But that's who popped to mind when you asked me that.
Oh, fantastic. Well, you have done it. Housewives rapid fire.
Was I okay? I was so
nervous. Oh, you were great.
Oh my God. You are a delight. I think your knowledge is so micro. I
thank
love
you,
it.
Thank you.
It is. And now we have more questions about your book, Danny, because we are literally excited about it. And I don't know, Sarah Huron has read every single pop culture book and celebrity memoir. So she is an actual expert in this field. So if she said she likes it, good review. Everybody buy it.
Yes, everyone buy it. Come on. You support your local bookstore, go to Amazon, wherever you need to buy it, buy it.
Yes. And I haven't finished it yet because I just got my hands on it a couple of days ago. And I had to read.
How dare you?
I know. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. And usually I speed read celebrity books. It's kind of one of my strengths. I can read a bachelor memoir in 2 hours and find the tea. But I actually like you. And I wanted to read the book and I don't want to miss anything because it is filled with so many references. I was literally choking this morning thinking about your dad trying to do the Mighty Ducks flying V during your soccer game. And I just want to know, like, when you sat down to write this book, what was your biggest, like, what do you want your reader to get? What's the biggest takeaway that you want the reader to get from this book?
Ultimately, I just want people to have a good time reading it. I want them to laugh. And you mentioned the pop culture references. I hope they'll, you know, nostalgia will be sparked with that kind of stuff. But I want people to giggle and laugh. And there's a little bit of drama throughout it, too. So I didn't shy away from the drama. But I mostly just, I think everything's so tough right now. It's like, I just want people to be able to read this by the pool or the beach on a spring break or something and have a good time and hopefully get to know me better and then also relate to their own lives. I've heard from a lot of people, you know, there are some family stories in there that I like to think, I tried to write sort of as like my version of like the vacation movies with Chevy Chase or, you know, that's the kind of vibe I was trying to put out there. And I've heard from people who've read the book who said, oh, I did that family vacation from Ohio to Florida and I recognized my dad in that story or I had a date like that like you wrote about. And so I hope people also think about their own lives and some of their awkward or cringy moments, but ultimately I just want people to laugh and giggle and have a gay old time.
Your family is in it. I mean, even from the parts that I've gotten to read so far, like a decent amount, did you have to like sit them down and be like, hey, I'm putting you on blast, not putting you on blast, but like, you're getting the book.
You know, I was very nervous for them to read it. I didn't let anyone see it until they got the copies, which was a couple of weeks ago. They got the copies and read it. And I was so nervous for my mom and my dad to read it, but ultimately they really liked it. And so I was relieved when they said they enjoyed it. But yeah, I wanted people to laugh. You know, I grew up loving books like by David Sedaris, or I love Casey Wilson's memoir, which is the more recent one, or Phoebe Robinson. And I love people being able to pick up a book and read a chapter of it and have a few laughs and then, you know, put it down or continue reading. But I wanted each chapter to be almost like a self-contained story. So my parents and my family sort of appear throughout in different stories, but hopefully people relate to the parental stuff.
Oh, for
when,
sure.
When you sat your parents down, were you like, okay, here's the worst passage first? Or did you just sort of give them a general sense of what was going on?
You know, my dad was really excited about it. Like he knew he was going to be in it and he was just thinking like, oh yes, I'm going to be in it. Like he was excited. My mom, on the other hand, she's a little bit more buttoned up and she was the most nervous about what was going to appear in it. And she can be, just more buttoned up. But my dad read it first. And I think he sort of guided her and told her, skip that chapter or skip that chapter. So she didn't read. I don't know if she read all of it. She said she did, but I don't know if she read all of it. Because there's a couple, you know, there's a couple date stories or, you know, there's, I don't know. There's, I'm not shy with my language. So there's swearing in it and stuff. So I knew that my mom wouldn't like love that stuff, but ultimately she said she liked it.
That's good. I mean, your mom also on the podcast, I feel like your podcast listeners love hearing stories about her too, which are usually in your detours. And then the book has detours too, which I loved when I was flipping through it. I loved that it, because that's one of the best things I think about your show is when you are talking, you're great, obviously talking about Bravo, but when you do share those personal stories, it's great. And the book is obviously like all detours, but then there's detours within the detours.
Well, thank you. Yeah. I mean, I really wrote it for fans of people who listen to my show. And it was such a great opportunity for me to kind of like workshop stuff on my show. And I was touring right before the pandemic and oftentimes people would come up to me. And although my show, people come to it for Real Housewives or I have celebrity interviews on the show. What I was finding was like most often people were saying, oh my God, that story you told about your mom and her woodpecker.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, that's what people were coming up to me and talking about and saying, oh, that happened to me or this, whatever. And so those were the stories that I wanted to tell in the book because I realized that that's what people like the most. So initially, when I was going out with the book, some certain publishers were saying, oh, you should do a Housewives book or something. And I kind of felt like, well, I'm talking to people and it's like, this is what people are relating to the most. And it's a dream project of mine, what I've always wanted to write. So it's been fun. And then, yeah, there's some housewife references in there, and there's tons of pop culture and stuff like that. But ultimately, I think it's just something everyone can relate to in different ways, hopefully.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you talk about coming out, you talk about depression, you talk about grief, you talk about waking up on vacation and seeing your 12-year-old brother driving. You cover a lot of topics.
There's a lot of topics.
Was there one each favorite thing or like chapter you're most looking forward for your fans or even new fans to read?
Yeah, there's I think my favorite story is this one about my boyfriend and I. We were on a sort of a group dater with his boss and his wife and then a couple other coworkers. And it was right after I saw the movie Judy with Renee Zellweger. And I was just so obsessed with it. Mm-hmm. And so we made a bet of like, my boyfriend said, there's no way you can go this whole dinner without bringing up the Judy Garland movie. And so there's sort of this back and forth and it was a struggle. And I ultimately wasn't able to win the bet, but people can read the story, but it makes me laugh a lot. And I think it sort of encompasses both the awkwardness and that hopefully people will find funny in these stories. And then also the pop culture.
It's oh so my good.
God. Go buy Danny's book. We love it. We love feeling awkward and uncomfortable and then equating it to pop culture. That is what we do on this podcast.
Yeah. Yes. Please buy it. It'll be a good time. You laugh at the beach. It's an easy light read.
March 8th, right?
Yes. March 8th. And there's an audiobook or the hardcover. My boyfriend actually drew some pictures in the hardcover. So, you know, there's some pictures throughout.
A picture book.
I don't want to oversell that it's a picture book, but there are a handful of drawings.
Amazing.
And you narrate the audiobook?
I do. Yes. Oh, yes. Fun. So that was a fun, crazy experience as well. But I hope people read it and read it by the pool or whatever.
Lovely. Well, after all of those touching things, we're about to go to the metaphorical boxing ring with a bunch of celebrities in a little segment we like to call Celebrity Birthday Boxing Mania. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Where we put celebrities in a fictional ring whose birthday it is this week, and we say who would win in a physical fight. It is quite the game. Danny, I am not giving you the hardest one. I am giving you a light one to start it off. Here we have Kesha, formerly Ke Dollar Sign Huh, who is turning 35 this week, versus Rebel Wilson, who is turning 42 this week.
I'm gonna give it to Ke Dollar Sign Huh. Just you know, I'll forever think of her note in the song Praying that still gave me chills. So that to me, that can knock anyone out.
That's a good answer.
Well done.
Really good answer. Gwen Flamberg, we have a little bit harder one for you. Mm-hmm. We have Lupita Nyong'o, the princess of this country, because we stole her from another one and she's so amazing, versus Jessica Biel with the arms of a female Arnold Schwarzenegger, who is 40 years old this week.
Yes, yes. This is a very tough one, Travis. And a little bit... I'm equally sad and very happy that you threw it to me, because while Jessica Biel does have the body of a, you know, a female Terminator,
Amazon, yeah,
Lupita Nyong'o, she knows how to hang in Wakanda. And I think that she would have some tricks up her sleeve and she would knock Biel right out.
Wow, the only person who could beat Jessica Biel in a physical match in the celebrity world.
True.
Sarah Heron, we have two male songbirds up for your consideration. We have Josh Groban, who turns 41 this week, versus Justin Bieber, who turns 28 this week.
I mean, Justin Bieber would be more likely to get into the fight, but I'm going to go with Danny's strategy of Josh Groban could kill someone with a note. Not kill, or get them out of the ring with a note.
Oh my God. Well, he doesn't have a Kesha praying note, but yeah. God bless him for thinking he can.
Yeah. Wait, he's 41. I'm sorry to interrupt. He's 41.
He is 41 this week. That's why we play this game, because it's fun to figure out how old.
I mean, I always just
are.
Think of him on the Oprah Winfrey show. Wasn't he like, I don't know, 19 or something? I don't know. I always just remember that.
Mm-mm. He is 41 this week. Shout out Josh Groban. And Danny, because you are our special guest, you get to pick the winner of the menage at the end. We have left in the ring Josh Groban, who just killed someone with a baritone note, 41 years old, Lupita Nyong'o, princess and Wakanda star, 39 years old, and Ke Dollar Sign Huh, 35 years old.
Okay, I have to go with my original choice with dollars. I can't stop saying. Now I'm only going to think of Kesha.
Yeah, she's.
You just ruined her name for me, and I love you for it.
Great.
I'm going to have to go with my original choice because, again, that note haunts me in the best of ways.
Me too. Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful angel is Kesha. Well, we were praying for Danny Pellegrino and we got him. So thank you to my host, Sarah and Gwen, and to Danny for helping me spill all of this piping hot celebrity this week. Again, this is Travis Cronin on Us Weekly's Hot Hollywood podcast, your weekly peek into the glamour, glitter, fashion, fame of your favorite celebrities. Because after all, everybody,
They're just like us.
And go buy Danny's book, How Do I Unremember This? Unfortunate True Stories. Pre-order it now just so you don't forget. Yes, March 8th, it comes out, but pre-order it now so you don't forget. If you listen to this podcast, you love celebrity gossip and feeling awkward and uncomfortable. So go buy the book.
Yes, order it, buy it, read it.
Order it.
Time.
Yes. Well, thank you again, Danny. You are such an nice to have a like-minded person who only cares about celebrity gossip and doesn't feel bad about it.